This episode sponsored by Apollo Neuro.
Having problems getting a good night's sleep? Apollo Neuro may be the help your body needs. Apollo Neuro is a wearable designed to calm your nervous system so you can fall asleep faster and sleep deeper without medication or side effects. It works by sending gentle, silent vibrations through your wrist that signal safety to your body, like a hug for your nervous system. The result? Fewer wake-ups, deeper sleep, and mornings where you actually feel rested. It's not just a sleep tracker. Apollo actively helps you regulate your body, and Smart Vibes AI automatically personalizes the experience for sleep, calm, focus, and recovery. It's scientifically backed, with clinical trial participants gaining up to 60 minutes of sleep a night. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Visit apolloneuro.com/audio and take $99 off today.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only Coach Poop podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual. As we do have, obviously, a lot to get to. The Riders' season came to a halt on Saturday evening as they got walloped by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in this year's West Final. So we will, of course, talk about that game, some of the decisions in that game, and sort of the overall game plan that the Riders took in that game, especially on defense. We will also get into, you know, sort of where the Riders go from here. I think most pertinently will be the conversation around what do they do at quarterback, which I think has once again become a little bit more of an interesting discussion than just a couple of weeks ago. And we'll also look ahead a little bit to the Grey Cup, which will once again be the Toronto Argonauts and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, a rematch from the 2022 game that was played in front of 5,000 people at Mosaic Stadium.
Yeah, that was not a great showing by the Mosaic Stadium crowd. I do remember that one. Yeah.
No. However, something happened today on NFL Sunday as we record this on a Sunday evening.
Yes.
A quote came across my feed today that was something that we just had to discuss.
Naturally. It like clicks all of our boxes for things that qualify to make the open.
Yeah. So the New Orleans Saints, I believe they won today. After the game, their interim head coach, because they fired their other guy, Dennis Allen, I believe his name was.
After they had lost 7 in a row.
Yeah. So here's the quote. I don't even know the question that prompted this, or if he just said it in sort of an open monologue situation. I'm not sure. Because, you know, sometimes like every like coach's post-game media availability is different. Sometimes they're like, okay, we're just going to open the floor to questions. Some guys like to come out there and talk a little bit off the top of their head before they take questions.
Well, and some
I think Mike Tomlin like runs through all the injuries and stuff before and then starts answering questions kind of thing, just to get that over with because he has to.
Well, and I almost feel like sometimes too, players and coaches, like their lips are loaded with the answer they're going to give no matter what. So this also could have been that case as well.
Mm-hmm. So he says, I'm a pretty open guy. This is Saints interim head coach, Darren Rizzi. I'm a pretty open guy. I go to the bathroom. This is how my day started. I like how he says, I'm a pretty open guy. I go to the bathroom. Like, yeah, we all go to the bathroom. Thanks, Darren.
There's literally a children's book that covers this.
Yeah.
Everybody poops. New Orleans Saints edition.
Yeah. I go to the bathroom. This is how my day started. I clogged a toilet. I'm like, this is going to be a crappy day. Pun intended.
You know how you're always looking for signs from the universe? I guess if you're about to make your NFL head coaching debut, that clogging your toilet first thing before going to work is probably one of those things going, oh, great. We've lost 7 in a row. I'm the interim head coach, and I just plugged my toilet before my NFL head coaching debut. So, you know, you look into the universe, you read into things like that. I could imagine. I'd probably think the same thing. I'd be like, yeah, my day's shot. This is going to be real bad.
Well, I mean, you've kind of done that. I mean, at the CN Club during the men's Saskatoon men's bond spiel a couple of years ago, you like blew up a toilet. There was no chance that thing was clogging with the damage you did to it. So.
Oh, no. That's because it actually looks like it exploded. And you know what? That was me purging the previous two losses out of my system.
Did we win after that? Or, no, was that was after the game, right? Or was it before?
Yes, it was after the. It was after our second loss because we were. Sorry. Yeah, because we were on the ropes. That was the loss that put us on the ropes because it's a triple knockout. Two things happened. A, I destroyed that toilet. And B, Luke Saretsky, our skipper, looked at us and said, I'm not coming back to this curling club sober. And that's
when we had to play there for like the rest of the weekend.
Exactly. But we were not sober the rest of the weekend. So the prophecies, A, I purged the losses from my system. And then B, we came back and we were not sober. That's what happens when you start drinking old fashions at 11 a.m. And we're only basically 2 months to the day away from that again. I can't wait.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is coaches out there in your press conferences, your media availabilities after games, especially interim head coach energy, don't be afraid to like have a little bit of humor like that, because this is just a great quote. And honestly, I hope the Saints go on a run now because of it.
Oh, 100%. And they somehow like adopt it. Like, you know how sometimes teams will adopt like something stupid, like cowboy up, like the Boston Red Sox or a bunch of idiots, like the Boston Red Sox.
The sheep on the field the last year.
Exactly.
Where that
right?
became a bit of a thing. Yeah.
So they could just be, they can just call themselves the toilet plugger. Or pun intended or something.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Go after your coach's energy. I feel like, hey, it seemed like nothing, but like I was watching, I had a good chunk of football watching today. And after watching the chaotic way that both my Minnesota Vikings and your Pittsburgh Steelers won, I did see the ending of that Falcons-Saints game, and it looked like the vibes were high. So, same thing. Maybe sometimes you just need to purge the negative shit out of you to start your day.
It's entirely possible, but the real question from this is, is the Pope going to tweet about it now? Because I don't know. You haven't been following this?
No, I haven't.
So the Pope often on Twitter, when talking about like religious stuff, will use the hashtag Saints, which is the one the NFL has purchased to put the New Orleans Saints logo on with it. So every time he tweets something with hashtag Saints in it, because he uses it all the time, he clearly means it a religious thing, but then it always ties, it always shows the Saints logo. So everyone thinks he's saying something about the New Orleans Saints. So I'm like, oh, please make reference. If somehow this message reaches the Pope's comms team,
yes,
please somehow make reference to this in some sort of way that is appropriate to the Pope's image. I don't know what that would be, but
I've got it. It's like, you know, Jesus says, you know, purge as many sins as your toilet can hold. Hashtag Saints. See, right there we go. You're welcome, Pope's comms team. John Fraser's here for you, and the vibes are high recording this one tonight.
See, and nothing gets us going like a good poop joke. And okay. it didn't even involve any lettuce. Can you believe it?
Oh my goodness. See, because he wouldn't have clogged the toilet having the lettuce, so he clearly
had something like edible. So.
Exactly. Not whatever that rotting brown goo is that they pass off as lettuce at Subway. I can't wait until somehow an algorithm runs a Subway commercial during our pod.
Oh.
Like
It'd be incredible.
Well, I feel like at some point it's going to hear like,
I mean,
you know,
if it's happened by now, someone would have told us surely, right? So.
Oh, one of our seven listeners would have for sure.
Yeah.
It's actually funny. Speaking of Subway, not on a poop joke. Grandpa Ted, the purveyor of the Zach Kolaris' number one fan sign, was in Winnipeg for the game, and he said, "I made sure that I didn't have any Subway lettuce before coming here, so I don't miss the game." So
that's entirely fair.
Grandpa Ted knows to avoid the lettuce.
As he should. I mean, he's one of the seven, so he should know.
Mm-hmm.
He should
heed our advice.
It was, you know, we are fairly certain it was the Subway at the time at Real that was the cause of the Banjo Bowl bowel situation. So
that's, hey, like I said, I have had conversations with Rider players that said the pregame meal for one of the two buses that went there was, in fact, Subway.
Yeah, like, this is the important reporting we got to get to the bottom of, right?
Well, 100%. Like, because if it was some local joint, it'd be like, you know, I don't really even want to suggest that getting out there, you know, support local and all that, even if they've had a shitty day. But if it was a franchise Subway and their lettuce is what caused the Banjo Bowl meltdown, poop down, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good thing. Stay away from that lettuce. Get this if you're going to Subway. Like, it's funny when I go to Subway now and I don't have, like, I'll have a sub, but I won't have the lettuce.
Yeah.
No problems.
Yep.
Like, it's completely passable fast food. If you like something a little different, and if you, even if you get the spinach apparently seems to be washed, not rotting brown goo.
So. Yeah. I've often had the spinach. I mean, I haven't had it in a while, but when I do, I get spinach and it's just fine. And like, when we rented a cottage back in June, yep. And my father-in-law, my mother-in-law came up to visit us there one day. They brought lunch, yep. Which happened to be Subway. And apparently my mother-in-law also gets spinach, but she didn't like just for flavor reasons or whatever.
Right.
So Bill, my father-in-law, is like, oh, you got spinach like Marilyn. And he was like, yeah. I was like, you don't know about the lettuce? And we got into it from there. So
clearly Bill is not one of the seven.
No, he is not. We discovered that through other avenues as well, but that's okay.
It's all right, Gas. And only like two members of my family listen to
it. Oh, me. I know. I never anticipated. It's fine. I wasn't signed about that.
That's fair. That's fair.
There was definitely some sign going on Saturday. Ooh. Across Saskatchewan as the Riders' season came to an abrupt end and a loss in the West Final. We will get into that, the future of the team and the Grey Cup and a whole lot more. But as always, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
Well, it's a Sunday night.
And my Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Yep. My Blue Bombers are off to the Grey Cup for the fifth time in a row. So it's a double fisting Sunday fun day as we record this here. First off, Discovery walked into Sobey's Liquor. And I was looking for one of the usuals. I'm like, this feels like a IPA weekend. And I found the Black Bridge Brewery Eclectic IPA. It is a single hopped sour IPA. Comes in at around 6%. It is great. It almost starts as an IPA, and then you get that, like, a sour aftertaste.
Yeah.
And the only downside I find is most sours, the way they're brewed, you know, you get, like, a 4% sour or something like that. And sometimes, you know, you want to feel the beers, right? You want to have a beer that has beer in it. And this is that, and it's a nice, fun combination. And, yeah, found it on a whim. So it's quite good. It's single hop IPA, strong citrus aroma and flavor, tangy and tart is on the can, and that's the best way to describe it. Speaking of tangy and tart, I then went fancy with the double fist tonight. I used this technology known as a shaker to throw in some LB vodka,
yeah,
LB gin, cucumber, and lemon, gave it a shikita, 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 and poured it into my Winnipeg Jets glass. By the way, 14-1 Winnipeg Jets. And yeah. Having a little double fist on a Sunday night here.
Why not?
Hey, yeah, I don't got to work tomorrow, so.
No. For me, decided to bust open a Space Cadet from our friends at the Pile of Bones Brewing Company.
Oh, can't go wrong there.
Just because it feels like one of those nights. That's really all there is to it. I don't know. It's a great beer. One of the best. One of my favorites in the province, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a good. It's just a good IPA, which it seems to be. It's fall. It's IPA season.
Yeah, and I gotta say, the new laser printed cans instead of like the plastic label on it.
Yeah,
they look pretty sharp. Like
they look super sharp. Yeah. They did throw me off a little though.
Yeah, yeah. The coloring's a little different, but I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. Like the colors are just brighter. The designs are more vivid. It was a nice refresh without being a refresh.
Mm-hmm. So the Riders did lose the West Final to Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But before we get into that, we do have to discuss one thing that happened earlier in that day, which kind of always, you know, life tends to find a way to always put things into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That was on Saturday morning. We learned of the passing of Winnipeg Sun Sports editor Ted Wyman. Just one of the good ones. And yeah. It's difficult to get through. I heard it was a fairly emotional scene in the Winnipeg, in the Princess Auto Stadium press box before the game. His seat's been permanently retired now. There was a note from Wade Miller there to Ted. And, you know, it's a tough one. Like, I'm not going to sit here and claim that, like, Ted was one of my best friends or anything like that. But, I had a working relationship with the guy. I've known him since 2012 or so when I started covering this team. And just genuinely one of the great guys of this business. And, you know, there's a lot of grizzled vets in this business who aren't always so kind and welcoming to the new kids on the block. but Ted was not one of those guys. I never once felt from the start that I was out of place, that, you know, he felt that he was above anyone. He was just, he's just one of the good ones, and it sucks that he got taken from us so soon.
No, for sure. I know I spoke to our friend Colin Hodgson, as Ted was obviously big in the curling community as well. Mm-hmm. And Hodgie said, and kind of the same thing, you know, there's, I don't want to use this to rant against certain sports reporters, but there's good ones, there's bad ones with athletes and other media members and alike. That's just what it is. And and he said, yeah, Ted was the same way with, you know, upcoming athletes, you know, as Hodgson kind of burst onto the scene here when he made the Briar with Carruthers a few years ago. And Ted was always, fair to reporter or to athletes and good with them and everything like that. And myself, I never had a chance to work with Ted alongside Ted, but naturally being a Winnipeg sports fan and curling fan, read a lot of Ted stuff. So,
I completely forgot just simply outstanding at his job too. But that doesn't really matter in this scenario, but
no, but I mean, it's just, like you lose a good one, you lose a guy that was great at the job. And it's funny. I said, I think you summed it up best when you shared the that he had passed with me.
Yeah.
And I said, Bombers by a million tonight. And you summed it up best saying, nah, he'd want the story to be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, it sucks. Fuck cancer. Yeah, it really, like you said, it really just puts things in perspective sometimes.
Yeah, so there's obviously no easy way out of that. Riders did lose the West Final. Not a shocking, not a super shocking result. Full disclosure, yes, on 3downnation.com, I picked against Ben Grant because I had to, if I had any chance of winning. So he had picked the Toronto Argonauts and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I picked... then, of course, the Montreal Alouettes and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Though, as I later tweeted after Toronto won that game and he clinched the title, that had it not mattered, I would have picked the Toronto Argonauts and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Yes.
This past weekend for a variety of reasons. Number one, I really didn't think both number one seeds would lose. It didn't seem like it was that extreme of a scenario where at least one of them would win. And I felt the Bombers were the better odds of that.
I agree. Yep.
What did surprise me, though, and we talked about this during the week, and I've talked to it with a few people, I thought one of two scenarios are probably going to play out was either the Bombers would find a way to win a close one, or the Riders would just kick the shit out of them. I didn't necessarily expect the Bombers to come out and just lay the wood to the Riders the way they did.
Well, and I think the biggest factor of that is we all thought the Riders had the ability to take Brady Oliveira out of the game and put it the ball into the hands of Zach Hilaire, somebody who... we've both been very vocal in pointing out, like, you know, you hear, and it was, okay, it was super refreshing, and I don't know if this was us, but I heard Justin Dunk talk about on the pregame show, hey, he's good in the playoffs, but his numbers aren't that great. I heard Dave Thomas mention it. I heard, like, a lot of people mention it. It wasn't just this normal slurp fest for Zach Hilaris.
Well, and I mean, sure that is Rider Radio, so.
We finally get this concept out of the mainstream that Zach wins games, but he doesn't play great. And Zach basically says, all right, fuck you, and goes out. Like, you could tell the game plan was put the game in Zach's hands. And for really the first time as a Blue Bomber in a meaningful moment, he went, okay, this is my moment to step up. Threw four touchdown passes, the reason being, I think you and I were both of the belief that the Riders could potentially blow out the Bombers if bad Zach shows up.
Yeah. And we'll get into a second, if they made bad Zach show up.
Right, exactly. But I mean, if you take away Brady, bad Zach shows up, the route is on, right? Or even if bad Zach shows up, well, you've still got Brady to grind it out. You've got Sergio coming up clutch. You've got the championship pedigree. That's why I definitely thought close Winnipeg win or Riders blow it. I didn't see Bombers blowout coming, and it's funny, it wasn't even like this, the final score I think flattered the Riders a little bit, but
for sure it did. Yeah,
this was definitely one of those games that, like, you watch, and even I'm sitting here watching it back as I keep forgetting to fast forward through terrible ads for terrible network television shows, and it's just, yeah, like, it was just never really in doubt. And, like, my superstitious side didn't want to start inviting people over for the Grey Cup game next Sunday. Like, I waited till, like, the fourth quarter to do so. But at halftime, I'm like, I should probably see what some of my buddies are doing next Sunday, because I feel like we need to have the fifth annual The Bombers Are in the Grey Cup party at Fraser's house.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear what happened. And for as much as people talked about Brady, and like obviously, you know, containing Brady Oliveira was going to be an important part of winning that football game. You and I both discussed it heading into it, and we've talked about it a lot all week, and I don't really remember hearing a whole lot about this part of the game plan otherwise, was making life miserable for Zach Kolaris, because we know the guy can pick apart zone defense. He's done it his entire career.
Yeah.
And what happened? Very quickly, they did not, they to their credit, you go back and you watch some of the film, they attempted to get a little bit of pressure at times on Kolaris, didn't accomplish it. And so whether it was through lack of execution, the game plan, or whatever the case may be, they didn't get pressure on Zach Kolaris. He picked apart the zone defense, especially, you know, Kenny Lawler is 4 catches for 177 yards and 3 touchdowns. And while it, you know, it wasn't until late that it really got out of reach. When you fall behind early to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, you know, two and a half, two majors, 3 possessions, becomes a very tall task to come back on them, especially at home. And it was clear that the momentum just was never going to fully recover. I felt like, okay, like it happened early in the second half where the Riders got it down to 1 score. And I believe I was talking about this with CBC's Dan Plaster. I was like, he thought in the second half the Riders were going to pull, you know, they were going to make a comeback here. And I was like, no, they'll probably get close, but not actually get all the way back. And that's pretty much what happened. And when you fall in a hole like that, you just leave yourself such a small window of opportunity to get back into it that you need to hit on everything and make no mistakes along the way to make that happen. And they didn't do that. So they didn't complete the comeback. They didn't get in Zach's face enough. Like, he got knocked down a few times throughout the course of the game, but they didn't get a single sack. They didn't force a hell of a lot of throws. There was a few, but it wasn't good enough. And I know fans are, you know, we're angry and, you know, ragging on Corey Mace for the zone defense, but that's just who they are.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fundamentally change the DNA of your team come this time of year. You just can't.
No.
So you're not going to suddenly ask a team that's basically run zone all year to go play man-to-man in the Western Final. They're probably going to just suck at it. So there's not a lot you can do about that, and maybe they don't, you know, believe outside of maybe a Roland Milligan or a Marcus Sales, they really have the guys to run man-to-man, right? So there's a lot of factors into that. So I think at the end of the day, you know, to help with that zone, they had to get in Zach Kolaris' face. They had to make it a long, difficult night for him. And they didn't, and they paid the price, and they lost. That's what this game was in the simplest of all its forms.
Well, and you'd think that, okay, if Zach's going off, you're at least able to contain the rush, contain Brady. And Brady, although didn't pop off for any big ones, but like every first or second down run was 5-6 yards.
Yeah.
Like hell, you gave up a 48-yard run on a quarterback sneak.
Yeah. Well, what happened was, like, the passing game was so good early, they passed to open the run.
Yeah, 100%.
But Zach Kolaris was, you know, shredding the defense, as, you know, some of the players said before the game they were going to do, and they did. So credit to them. You know, the passing game was working, so you had to respect it, which meant there was just enough room for Brady to get going.
Well, and as well, too, one thing that Buck Pierce does well, another reason why you have to get pressure on Winnipeg to slow him down, is Buck Pierce knows, okay, and Mike O'Shea know, okay, you're coming to stop Brady. You're going to put the ball in, you know, you're going to put this in Zach's hand. So we're going to run a lot of stuff in the flats to Brady. We're going to, at a couple points, he was lined up as a wideout.
Yeah. Well, it's a vintage game plan. Like, we saw how many years did the Calgary Stampeders win a lot of big games by basically ignoring John Cornish because everyone was geared up to stop John Cornish. Then Bo Levi Mitchell comes out and throws 40 times for 500 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Well, and that's exactly and that's exactly it. That's exactly what this looked like. And then, you know, when, as you said, once you had to start respecting Zach's ability to throw the ball downfield, now you're watching Brady rip off 10, 20 yards because, you know, and the other thing too is Winnipeg got Nick Dembski involved, right? Like, like Nick Dembski ran the ball 10 times and he was their top targeted receiver. And that's another one that they were talking about. Well, you have to limit Nick Dembski because he's good for a couple big plans, big game plans. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, this was the most stress-free Bomber playoff game I've had in a while.
Oh, as it should have been.
It was just good, like, great execution by Winnipeg. Yeah. Great job by the fans, because, I mean, I know, along with Grant Pitet, I spoke with a couple other people that were there in Winnipeg that have been to Mosaic Stadium several times and were like, holy crap, it is loud in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the shit-talking of who's got the best fans, it doesn't matter. Princess Auto Stadium is built to be disruptive and loud.
Yeah.
And I
think they handled that fine. I don't think that was much of an issue.
No.
Like, they've been there. They know what to expect. It just, yeah, for the offense, like, the offense wasn't good either by any stretch of the imagination. There's lots of blame to go around overall, but ultimately it rests with the defense not being able to get in Zach's face.
No. And that's as simple as it gets, right? And I think you have the quotes from Corey Mace. I haven't had you were the first person to bring them up to me, but I think Corey Mace, and, you know, we've called him out on it this year and given him credit when credit's due. Like, I think this was a head coach in his first West final who, you know, has showed his inexperience at times this year. And yeah. I think this lays a lot at the hands of the coaching staff. Right.
Yeah. And to his credit, Corey Mace, fell on that sword after the game.
Right.
He said it was, you know, he didn't game plan. He didn't game plan well enough and he didn't have the players ready. And, you know, that's basically, you know, and that's what you want to hear. And it'll be interesting. Right. And I think he learned from it. He talked about how, you know, they wanted to be patient on defense. I think that was a mistake. I think 100%. That's something he's going to go back and look and say, okay, you know, that doesn't work out for me.
Right.
And we can't do this against this team again. The actual quote is, you know, quote, they had their way through the air on the ground. It puts you in a jam. When we look at the tape, there's going to be busts for sure. I don't care. That's on me. I have to get them better prepared. Shitty game plan. That's on my shoulders.
Groceries are getting more expensive and somehow less fresh. If you're tired of throwing away wilted greens and overpaying for produce that doesn't last, it's time to grow your own. Meet Garden. It's a sleek, soil-free indoor growing system that does the hard work for you. Using automated light and water, Garden grows fresh, clean food in your living room or kitchen all year long. No dirt, no daily chores, no green thumb required. Stop planning your life around grocery runs. Just harvest what you need when you need it. Visit mygarden.com. That's mygardyn.com. Garden. Harvest happiness.
And right. That's what you want to hear out of a leader. And
yeah.
And I know, like, you know, a lot of people got into the rookie head coach thing after that weird third down gamble on 3rd and 3 at their own 24 late in the fourth quarter. While I agree it was a bizarre and probably unnecessary decision, because I firmly thought they were coming out just to try and draw them offside. But they went for it, and I'm not going to fault the guy in too much in that moment,
no.
Considering the uphill battle they were facing. It's still not a decision that I would have made, but I can see the thought process. I can see kind of what you're thinking there, and the execution was off, and they didn't pick it up, and frankly, the game was probably over at that point anyway. If you punt, you're just delaying the inevitable, because Winnipeg's going to go into their 1 minute per play offense and kill most of the clock on their next drive anyway.
And even if you're punting from there, you're basically in Sergio range.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, if you're punting from your own 23, realistically for Sergio, you just got to get to the 50 for back to the Saskatchewan 50 and away you go. Right. So I don't, obviously, you know, football games don't come down to one play. That's and they don't come down to anything like that.
If you did that in like a 3-point game or something, then yeah, we would be having a much different conversation about
100%.
This. But considering the point of the game and the score at that time and the likelihood of you actually coming back, I'm like, okay, I wouldn't have done that, but I'm also not bad about it.
But see, I don't hate it there. And the reason I don't hate it is because, like I said, if you punt, you're basically saying to Winnipeg, okay, Sergio, come on out, give us a field goal, right? And you pointed out how good Mike O'Shea is at burning a minute per play off the clock. Like, he's just, he's the master of it. And on the opposite, let's say if you make it there, let's say your coach shows the faith in you to go for it from your own 23-yard line, and you convert. You know, to me, that's a big momentum shifter, right? Like,
the only thing I would respond to that was, you know, Corey said he had faith in Trevor and the offense there to convert. There was a 3rd and 2 in plus territory that you did not go for and opted to kick a field goal when you probably needed a touchdown on that drive, I think, to really get this game going.
Right. And I mean, there was a big part of that game, too, that was the old, you know, field goals versus majors.
Yeah.
Right. And I can understand, like, I get it. Like, if you get down the field twice, it's a 3-0, you know, you make it 3-0, 6-0. Okay. But you're right. You're already like, Again, as I watched the game on
replay
here.
It was already 14-3 at that point. Like, if it was 14-3, 14-6 at that point, like, I forget which drive it was exactly. I think it might have been the 14-6 drive. It's like, okay, if they score a touchdown here, this is game on. Instead, it's 3rd-and-2 and you settle for, I forget what the field goal was. But it wasn't the chip shot, but it also wasn't a bomb. It was one of those areas where you probably could have gone for it.
Right. You were in the gray area, right? I mean, it's the old, you know, you kick to make a one-score game a one-score game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you still needed a major after you kicked that. So, but again, Corey May seems like the guy that learns from these things.
Yes. He's so learned... I'm not at all concerned about the coaching staff going forward. They are a young group. I think he and Mark Mueller, especially, you know, new in their roles and, you know, the importance of their roles. I think they'll figure it out. I'm not concerned about that on the coaching angle going forward. I think it'll be fine. It's possible that Corey May still could end up being, I think, one of the best coaches this team has ever had.
Certainly. I mean, you look at his accountability, you look at, you know, bringing the penalties down, you look at, you know, the culture that Corey Mace has built. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, this is a team that looked rudderless, that looked lost, that just was an 18-wheeler falling off the cliff every single year. To going to a team that looks like they absolutely give a shit and they're playing for the guy. And again, they made the West Final. You're a game away from making it to the Grey Cup. Mm-hmm. You played a home playoff game. You dominated that home playoff game. Like, it's just like there's so many positives and you never want to say, oh, especially like, I get it. You can have it's okay to lose loss during the regular season. You don't want to end your season like that, but you know,
Like I don't think, like, I get what you're saying. Like, we're not, I referenced this in the good, bad, and the dumb after the game was there was a lot to learn from this. You know, sometimes you can learn a lot from defeat in these sort of scenarios, but I'm not going to come out here and write the infamous column that I forget. It seems like it was Steve Simmons. I don't remember who wrote it.
It was
Simmons who wrote the Austin Matthews Leafs, their first playoff series against the Washington Capitals that they lost. They were better off losing that. The young Leafs were better off losing that series than going on to beat the Ottawa Senators in the first round.
It was so stupid.
How's that gone for them? So like, I'm never going to say that you shouldn't win win in the playoffs when the opportunity presents itself, because every single season is sacred and you never know what's going to happen the next year. But yes, there are scenarios where you can learn, especially when you're a team that is growing, like the Saskatchewan Roughriders, where you're trying to get to that next level. Is when you get beat down by that team at the next level, you can learn some things.
Certainly, and again, this all comes back to, unlike the Austin Matthews Leafs that learn nothing and continue to gag in the playoffs, you know, this comes down to next year. Does Corey Mace go into a big playoff game, you know, at Princess Auto Stadium, at BC, at Edmonton, at Calgary, and learn from the mistakes he made in the past, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it comes down to, you know, like, Corey Mace as a head coach was still figuring out who the hell he was, like, in terms of am I going to be an aggressive guy? Like, he seemed to always constantly go between, am I going to be conservative? Am I going to play it by the book? Am I going to, you know, be Dan Campbell? And I think if he goes full Dan Campbell, I think he'd have success that way. And it seems like there's a fire. Like,
yeah, I think it's fair just to be like, figure out who you are, because he's kind of bouncing back and forth. Like, last week against BC, he was fairly aggressive. This week against Winnipeg, for the most part, he wasn't. And it's like, okay, like, you can have success either way. You could be Dan Campbell, or you can be Mattingly, you know, conservative and annoying like Ryan Dinwiddie and still be a very good coach. You just pick a lane, right?
100%. Like that's absolutely it with a guy like Dinwiddie. Who's
and it took
so
Dinwiddie
much...
a while. Like, how much did we make fun of Dinwiddie for 2 years for some of the dumb shit he did?
Oh, he did some of the dumbest shit he could do.
And now I don't think there's any doubt that he may be the best coach in the CFL.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if a guy is getting serious, you know, serious looks in the NCAA, you can generally tell that guy's pretty good football coach, right? So,
and it's not just because of his eyes. So,
so beautiful. But no, I think Mace will learn from this. He, unlike so many, him and Mueller,
they don't strike me as stubborn.
No, they strike me very much as two guys that, you know, are self-aware enough to go, okay, you know, what can we do? And you saw that growth during the season. Mm-hmm. And I think that growth will continue into the off season. And, you know, maybe the two of them just sit down and play a shitload of NCAA football this off season and learn when to go for it and when not to.
Maybe. And I think, you know, the big question going, there's a lot of questions going in next year. Like, I think you're going to see a fair bit of change in some spots on this roster, yeah. as, you know, Corey Mace has more of an opportunity to mold this roster in his image this year compared to last year, because now he has more of an idea of everybody and sort of what he wants. But obviously the big question is going to be who's going to be the quarterback next year.
Yes. Yes.
Trevor Harris scheduled to become a pending free agent. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. You know, I was very much in the camp of, yeah, bring this guy back on a 1-year deal. It seems like an obvious decision to make at this point. The guy had been the best quarterback in the league, or at least the West Division, second best probably in the league the last 6 weeks of the regular season. It seemed like a very easy thing to do, you know, give him another year under Mark Mueller. Maybe this whole thing will come together and it'll work. Then this whole week leading up to the West final, I couldn't help but shake the feeling of, and I had this feeling going into the West semifinal a little bit too, but I didn't think about it as much as I did in ahead of the West final, was if they fall behind, Darren Durant ain't walking through that door.
No.
Trevor Harris, that's not his DNA. He's not the guy who, when push comes to shove, if you're down a couple scores, he's going to suddenly, you know, run for 30 yards on a couple of plays and spark the team to victory.
No.
He's not going to have a fourth quarter like Durant did against the Lions in the 2013 West semifinal. And right. We saw that play out in the West final. Like, there was scenarios in that game. Like, I don't think Trevor Harris didn't play poorly. His receivers couldn't get open. Some of that is on them. Some of that is just on Winnipeg's secondary being damn good. Jordan
some
Younger.
Of it was they can't, and some of it was they can't run the ball.
Yep. There's a whole bunch of reasons why that happened. So I think Trevor Harris was generally fine in that game. He could have been better, but he could have been a lot worse.
Right.
But I just knew once they got down a couple of scores, they were in that like two touchdowns and a field goal sort of range. I'm like, I mean, unless they start getting turnovers, I'm like, this isn't a scenario where Trevor Harris is going to suddenly kick into another gear, because he's 38 years old and he hasn't done it at this point. He's not going to suddenly start doing it.
Well, and you look at a lot of Winnipeg's success lately has been from Zach Kolaris, although he's not the run first guy he might have been back in his Hamilton days.
No.
He's now healthy enough that he'll run.
Yeah, I think he had at least one decent one in that game.
Yeah, he had one decent run, and he's had one in other games where it allows him to run a little bit more like naked bootleg stuff, which Zach's very good at.
Yeah.
Because if he needs to run, he can, right? With Trevor Harris, will never lose you a football game.
No.
You will never watch a Trevor Harris game and go, Trevor Harris is the reason they lost that game, right? Even when Trevor Harris is bad Trevor, he's not the reason they lost, right? He's deathly accurate. He finds the guy that's open. He makes the right read. He does those things. But you're right. Like, Trevor Harris is that ultimate guy that, you know, he's always at 100 and doesn't have that extra gear in the playoffs. Like you said, Darian Durant. Like, who can forget that West semi where he basically said, fuck you, I'm winning? Right. And even I'll go as far as saying that Zach Kolaris had a little bit of that in him.
Yeah. Like his Hamilton days, he had that in him. No question.
Well, it seemed like he had it in him in the West final.
Yeah, he had it in him. Like, we know he's capable of it. He's done it in the past. We know Cody Fajardo has that in him.
Oh, 100% Cody does.
I think Chad Kelly does. He hasn't really shown it. Like we saw it at the 22 Grey Cup when he, you know, scrambled for that big run that basically set up the win.
Yeah.
You know, I think he kind of has that in him.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Harris doesn't. So the question is, which way do you go from that? So, and I don't know anymore. I'm not 100% sure. I think ultimately everyone probably agrees and they come back on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
But I hope it's a reduced 1-year deal and they're able to give him more pieces to work with and really bolster everything around him to hopefully put yourself in a scenario where that doesn't happen again, where you don't need your quarterback to do that, where it comes down to, because if you're within a score or you're ahead, Trevor Harris is probably one of the best quarterbacks you're ever going to find.
100%.
It's when you get down 2-3 possessions is when things kind of start to get dicey, especially in a playoff game.
Yes.
Because basically it's, you're coming down probably to, do you want Trevor Harris back? Or do you try to trade for Vernon Adams? Because I don't think Trey Ford's coming here.
No.
So the question, if he doesn't stay in Edmonton, he probably goes out east. So the question becomes, or, you know, is a Bo Levi Mitchell on the market again if he wants to keep playing? I don't know. You're kind of in the same age boat there. So So which flaw do you...
Bo's more dynamic, of course,
yes.
Right?
But yeah, so the question comes down to which flaw do you want to live with? Do you want to live with the guy who you know exactly what you're going to get and can try to work around? Or do you want the guy who maybe has a little bit of Darian Durant in them but could also throw a 6 picks in a playoff game?
And look right? Like complete, yeah, look like complete dog shit like a
yeah. Like the flaw in Vernon Adams, he's very good. I love VA. He's a guy that I think has gotten a raw deal a lot in this league. But at the same time, when push comes to shove, the chips are on the table. The guy tends to do dumb things.
Yes.
So yes. I don't know. I don't know if there's an appropriate answer there. And that'll be, I guess that's why Jeremy O'Day's, you know, to use a line from Mike Tomlin, is well compensated. is to make these decisions, right? So.
Yeah. Well, okay. So to me, if AJ Ouellette is back next year.
Yeah.
Which I know we weren't really going to discuss it, but I think this comes down to the quarterback decision as well. If AJ Ouellette is back next year, you need to just accept this is what he is.
Yeah. Well, I would hope it's at least at a reduced rate. So
Well, that for one. And yeah. Two, you have to accept that AJ Ouellette is not your game breaker. You can't try to game plan around him. You can't try to let him run the rock into the line of scrimmage and come out with nothing over and over and over again, hoping that he busts a 20, 30 yarder, right? Like,
no.
It seems like too many times through this entire season, and in the West Final, it was like, okay, we just got to get AJ going. And he just, this is what he is now, right? Like, he is not... Same thing. He's the perfect guy you want if you're up. But it's just there was too much of AJ Ouellette running right into the line of scrimmage. And that's a shitload of money that could be spent better elsewhere. Right. Like, you know, we've always talked about how you don't spend money on American running backs in this league.
No.
Like, it's just that's
like,
just
like I mean, like, look at how it's worked out for Toronto. Right. Like, they let AJ Ouellette go. And right. They waited and they ended up getting Kadeem Carey on a pretty good deal late in free agency.
Right, exactly. Or even how long did it take? It took Stanback didn't sign till late in BC, did he?
I don't remember. I feel like that was fairly early though.
Yeah, but I mean
he was coming off a bit of a weird year and
right.
You know, when you get released by the Grey Cup champions, that kind of, you know, it becomes right. A bit of a thing, right? So
like I get it. Like if you have a Canadian, right? If you have Brady Oliveira, because not only are you spending the money to get a good running back, you're spending the money to be able to put somebody else out there in a position that
yeah.
You need, right?
With a guy like a Brady Oliveira or Andrew Harris in the past is of course an exception, right?
So. Exactly, right? Like because it allows you both roster flexibility and, you know, a damn good running back. Like and especially with Winnipeg having the luxury of having Johnny Augustine, who's a serviceable backup there as well with a Canadian passport. So to me, the quarterback decision comes down to, okay, I don't know who that guy would be. I think that largely comes down to your U.S. scouts, but or maybe it's Raquel Armstead, right? If you bring back Trevor Harris, you got to find a dynamic game breaker someplace else, whether that's a big-time receiver that Trevor can go deep on if he needs
to.
Or
I think they need that regardless, but yeah.
Right. But I mean, like, to me, you can't bring Trevor back and not bring back a game breaker. Now, alternatively, if you want to roll this, if you want to run it back, I think you need Vernon Adams in there. You need Vernon Adams. You need somebody that's way more dynamic that is going to lose you games, but could potentially win you one at the right time, right? So, again, if Trevor Harris comes back and takes a lot less money because basically he's played one full season.
Yeah, like I would imagine. For Harris at this point, it's probably the Riders or retirement, I would think.
Right.
You'd think. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think Calgary is at a point where you take a flyer on an old quarterback because they're trying to turn around.
Right.
Like, Harris isn't going to energize the Edmonton market.
Well,
those are the only two teams that really stand out that would be also looking for a quarterback this year, right?
So. Right. And PJ Walker's going to be the guy in Calgary. I honest to God believe that PJ Walker's going to turn out in Calgary.
No, we'll see. But yeah.
Like, I just, guy's got tons of talent, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, he is also back to being a free agent because he's on the practice squad. So there's nothing stopping Jeremy O'Day from being like, hey, here's a few more bucks. But that's.
Now that would be a spicy one. Like, yeah. Right? Bring Trevor back, bring PJ back, let him learn the Canadian game here, and away we go. So I think moving forward, if you bring Trevor back, you got to go out and spend a ton of dough to either find somebody that's not AJ Ouellette as a running back or find, like, I'm not saying they're going to go get Kenny Lawler, but go get Kenny Lawler.
get a Kenny Lawler or a Geno Lewis or something.
Right.
Just exactly. Don't give them $300,000.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, or give them 300,000. Well, it's funny because Lawler restructured his contract.
Well, I don't think Lawler's actually making that much in Winnipeg, but I mean, no. Edmonton did the back-to-back 300K receiver thing, and how's that worked out for them, right?
It has not.
And that's not like Geno's played fairly well, but that's just a very hard number to live up to.
Yeah, certainly. Well, it's a very hard number to, especially it limits the pieces you can put around that guy, right? Like, yeah. Could you imagine, though, the shot in the arm this would be if Trevor Harris basically said, I'll come back for 250 plus incentives?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
and even down to like 300 or something, would 350 would be a huge drop to be able to do something with.
Well, and I would argue the other guy that you should be asking for a pay cut from is Jamarcus Hardrick.
Yeah, possibly.
Because this is
the thing about the CFL. Even guys under multi-year contracts, you're pretty much going year to year because there is a lot of renegotiation for just about every player every season.
Oh, 100%. Like to me, it was proven, and I get you could take, because he was on the sixth game the entire year, you could take his money and allocate it elsewhere, but like, I don't think this team needs Jamarcus Hardrick. Especially not one coming off a major injury, unless it's for about half of what you're going to pay him, right? Yeah. So, and maybe that's another way to free up some money and go get a guy. I think Sean Bain has the potential to be that guy, but the guy's a Band-Aid. But
no, his issue is he kept dropping every third pass thrown his way this year.
That's right. He got the old drop season. That's hard to get out of your head. So I think moving forward, I think Trevor is the best. Unless, yeah, you can absolutely rock the boat and get...
No, everything's out the window. If for some reason there is a shot, you have a shot at Trey Ford, you obviously take it.
Oh, 100%.
Because then you're set. If he develops like everyone thinks he was, you're set for the next 10 years.
Right. Right. You might be, you know, a little.
There might be some bumps in the road next year if that happened. But in the long term, that's obviously a no-brainer move.
Oh, 100%. Bring back Mary Alford as well, too, because I think although the numbers.
I think that's over.
You think so?
He had a decent playoff game, but most of the regular season, he just went right for the sideline.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. He was so close to busting one in the playoffs.
He was. And credit to him. Like he obviously was where he played hard that game. And I honestly don't know. Like maybe he's just doing what was asked of him in the regular season. I don't know. Maybe he was nursing something, but he didn't look like himself for most of the regular season.
No, that's fair. And bring in somebody that's not Henderson to play in the secondary.
Well, yes, that's pretty clear.
That was painfully obvious.
Yeah. So yes, the Grey Cup this year, the 111th Grey Cup in Vancouver. I will be there, so we will have lots of coverage on 3 Down Nation, as there will be, as of the weekend, 5 of us on site. Obviously, Hodge, JC Abbott, Justin Dunk will all be there. I will be there, and Pablo from Montreal is apparently making the trip for the weekend. So we will all be putting in the work all week long at the Grey Cup. So watch for plenty of coverage on 3downnation.com. But as we were talking before we started recording tonight, if I could go back and redo my Grey Cup rankings, I think I might actually have dropped this one further than I did. I think I had it like 3 for some reason. I was weirdly into it before, but now I'm just not. There's just a lot of factors in this game where I'm like, I think it's going to be a pretty good football game. Like it's not like this is going to be a football game. Don't expect this to be like 42-40. This is going to be a 25-23 slugfest chess mass that's going to be really interesting to watch in that regard, but maybe not the most chaotic, entertaining game you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
So I think in that regard, that will eventually save the game because it's going to be compelling to watch. But the matchup going into this, I'm like, unless you're a Bomber fan or an Argo fan, there's not a lot that really gets me that excited. Like the league got lucky that Chad Kelly will not be a part of this week now.
Yes.
Because that would have been really awkward to have to roll him out there, and especially on media day, and, you know, have to talk about things, obviously. Well, so because you go two routes. Either one, everyone does the wrong thing and just ignores the bad stuff, and that's really awkward. Or two, this whole story comes back again in the middle of your biggest week of the year. So there was a no win for that from the league's perspective. Or three, one that I was kind of hoping for selfishly for content one day, would be the Argos just hid Chad Kelly on media day.
which I think would have been the outcome, because
it's possible,
you know that news organizations would have sent real newsies to come and give them the tough questions that sometimes, let's face it, as sports journalists were great in some ways, sometimes when you're that close to a team and that close to a league that's going to slap you in the wrist for doing stuff, sometimes you're not as strong as you often want to be on stuff like that. So I think the Argos would have ended up hiding him. So it all works out for everybody.
So in that regard, but on the other side of that coin, you know, the coach, the GM, or sorry, the quote-unquote GM, the actual GM, all these guys that were involved in the cover-up or attempted cover-up and all that are still there.
Yes.
And as far as we know, nothing really happened to them. So the Argos are kind of a gross team to kind of cheer for right now. And most people don't like cheering for teams that can have consistent success. So you're in a scenario where it's like, if you're the, you know, the neutral observer, how do you feel about this? Like, which way do you go? And I just, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what this game does on TSN because of that.
Well, and both teams are recent champions, right? It's not even like you have that fun, like, it's not like you have a Hamilton in there that, you know, hasn't won in forever. You've got
Montreal last year, right? Like,
right. You've got the team that has been to five straight against the team that beat them in 22. Now,
actually the best team in the league last year, probably.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So,
it's just, you're right. Like, I can put off my blue and gold tinted glasses, like, but even for me, like, as a Bombers fan, I think a lot of the talk, and Dusty and Glenn did a good job bringing this up on the TSN broadcast, and our buddy Derek Taylor on the CJOB broadcast that I was listening to on my way home, they did a really good job of bringing up the fact, like, okay, what is the Bombers' legacy if they lose their third straight Grey Cup?
Yeah.
But that's like a very Winnipeg, like,
yeah,
you don't care about that.
No, nobody, like, if you're not a fan of the team, you don't care, right?
Joe Common doesn't care about that, right? Like,
no.
Because especially, too, with the Winnipeg streak, they won back-to-back, so it's not like this is a Buffalo Bills thing, like, oh, can they finally get over the hump? No, it's like, can they go 3-2 in this stretch? Like, it's just, yeah, there's no sizzle.
No.
I think you're right for the common fan. I think this is going to be a boring football game because one of two things, again, is going to happen. I don't think Nick Arbuckle could lead Toronto to a rout.
No. That seems unlikely, unless Winnipeg forgets how to play defense or something.
Exactly, and Winnipeg secondary might be the best.
Or, like, Kadeem Carey rushes for, like, 300 yards or something absurd. Yeah.
That's probably the only... That's probably about it, right? So you're going to have a very good Toronto defense against a team that they play well against, and a very good Winnipeg defense against a team that they haven't beaten so far this year, but every game's been a grind. So I think football nerds like us will enjoy it, but your casual fan's going to see, you know, 25-20... and six field goals by Sergio Castillo and one touchdown on the scripted opening drive for the Blue Bombers and think, wow, that was a snooze fest.
Yeah.
But I need you to do one thing though, Joel.
Mm-hmm.
So when Sergio kicks six field goals
yep.
to lead the Blue Bombers to victory, and you are going to be there and you are going to be amongst the press.
Yeah.
Even though you may not get an MOP vote, I need you to correct the wrong that happened many years ago when we beat Hamilton. I need you to be there, boots on the ground, campaigning Sergio for MLB. Realistically, at this point, he's just owed one, so no matter what happens in the game, even if Winnipeg gets destroyed, Sergio for MLB. Let's make it happen.
I mean, we're in the business in this league of correcting mistakes from years past because Brady Oliveira is going to win MLB this year. Not that he's undeserving, but he should have won it last year.
Yes, 100%.
Right? So
he was even better last year. So let's make up the mistake. And no matter what happens, Sergio for Grey Cup MOP.
Groceries are getting more expensive and somehow less fresh. If you're tired of throwing away wilted greens and overpaying for produce that doesn't last, it's time to grow your own. Meat Garden. It's a sleek, soil-free indoor growing system that does the hard work for you. Using automated light and water, Garden grows fresh, clean food in your living room or kitchen all year long. No dirt, no daily chores, no green thumb required. Stop planning your life around grocery runs. Just harvest what you need when you need it. Visit mygarden.com. That's mygardyn.com. Garden. Harvest happiness.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.